This is the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza.
Hey, 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 Yakshamash.
Club to you too, or whatever.
You know, really, I love your style. I love the way you edit things together. Well, thanks for noticing. It's a real pain.
We welcome to the show, Christian Leitner.
Yeah, I'm proud of my heritage, and my mother used to make a lot of delicious meals. Kapusta, funky, pierogi, all that good stuff. I put sour cream on everything, and so a lot of Polish tradition there.
Yak Shamash, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. This is Jay Kokorowski. Of course, this is proudly brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Make sure you guys go to Bucky's Fifth Quarter for all your Wisconsin Badgers news, notes, you name it. For anything Badgers, we try to provide to you guys. And it's been a long month on my end. Happy June to everybody. This is June 5th, Sunday night, and we are very excited to talk to you guys. Big news, we're just waiting for the Polish Rifle Scott Wisniewski to phone in. Hopefully that will be in the next minute or so. And also, 8:15, two great guys to talk to. We got Adam Rigg, Brewer Nation, or thebrewernation.com. You hear him as one of the brewer insiders on the Mike Heller Show, on the Big 920, on the Big 1070 in the Milwaukee and Madison areas. You got Kurt Hoge, B5Q football basketball writer, but also right now working with MLB.com, covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Very proud of him. We'll have them come on in about 13 minutes or so. Discuss and have some good times there, talking some Milwaukee Brewers baseball or what we can. And you know, before we do that, let's catch up a little bit. It's been a while. Thank you guys for tuning back in. I know it's been quite a while. And you know, looking at this, and we're looking at. Let's start back with some big news, and we'll start off with that. You guys may have seen on our website this morning, but it is also the talk about ESPN's College Game Day coming to Lambeau Field September 3rd. That Saturday, of course, the opening weekend of the college football season. And for those that don't know, Barry Alvarez had hinted toward it earlier in the spring into the summer month, you know, upcoming summer months, about just Badgers may get that quote-unquote home game feel with it. And they may actually have that opportunity to have a college game day, which technically it's not on campus, let's just say that. It'll be at Lambeau Field, but it will have that hometown feel, sort of like how Houston was for LSU. But it appears like, according to Kirk Herbstreit on the Doug Gottlieb show, it appears that it is coming. We are still waiting on that. The official confirmation, let me just say that, from ESPN and from UW. But that looks like a lot of fun for Wisconsin fans, for LSU fans, and there's a huge slate of games that day. Along with Alabama, this is a 2:30 game, I mind you, for the Badgers and LSU. So I think that's really interesting that they're doing it up there. But it should be a great atmosphere. And we are now joined by the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski. Scott, good talking to you, brother. And how's the weekend been?
It's fine enough. Nothing earth-shattering. A couple shows, nephew's baseball game. I don't know. It's been fine. Always hectic. A lot going on all the time. So.
Yeah, that I completely understand. And with that, kind of digging in. And like I said, I told the listeners it's going to be about 10 minutes. We'll talk with Adam Rigg from thebrewernation.com. We'll talk with Kurt Hoge. You guys will be doing your Brewers Roundtable talk. We haven't had a chance to really even dive in deep over the past couple months into the
not
Brewers
at all.
Season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not really
so,
at all.
So we'll talk with Adam. We'll talk with Kurt and basically just break down what's been happening and what needs to happen for them going forward and talking about expectations. I know they They lost, if I'm not mistaken, 8-1 earlier today. To the Philadelphia Phillies.
Jake, I got a lot. I can't wait to delve in it because, you know, I want to talk about, you know, this whole notion of tanking or contending and why I think it's stupid to think tanking makes them any closer to being contenders. But we'll save some of that because I know that could be an interesting topic. So,
absolutely. And, you know, we got, I was talking, I don't know if you heard when I saw that you were on.
Yeah, I heard. I figured, ESPN game day being there. Yeah, I was listening to it. I was there, and I was having some phone issues, and I'm listening to the thing. I'm like, of course, I have technical difficulties, and we're still leading with Badger talk. But all kidding aside, it's huge. Are you any plans to be up at that game, by the way? Have you worked any of that out yet?
If Green Bay wants us there, by all means, is what my goal is. And depending upon if credential-wise, I mean, I do plan on being up there. And hopefully we're trying to work out stuff with the book. Obviously, I'm in the last phases of putting together the final draft that we submit to the publishers, to KCI Publishing, on that note. So with that, hopefully we can get some book signings up there. Is what we're trying to see what we can pull off there.
I'd love to figure out a way to get up there myself. I'm a nobody in the media now, but my old kind of stomping ground. It'd be kind of interesting, but it should be a lot of fun. It's hard to believe how quickly things have come. I mean, we're in the June, which I know summer starts in 3 weeks, but it's summer for all intents and purposes right now. And next thing you know, training camp starts, and then it'll be college football season, and then the NFL season officially will kick off. And lo and behold, that's how fast time goes nowadays. Especially, I mean, obviously, perspective-wise, I think it's just age and where we are in our lives with family and whatnot. But yeah, it'll be here in no time at all, and it should be interesting. And we'll talk more as far as credential-wise go and how we can work all that out when we get closer to that kickoff. So,
absolutely. And they, you know, it should be fun seeing ESPN back up there. Obviously, a huge game day atmosphere. They had it for Ohio State in 2010. They had, of course, 2011 against Nebraska. I was at both before I got into the media game, and both very stellar environments, to say the least. And that was really a lot of fun to see. I still feel bad for Lee Corso with fans chanting a certain a-hole chant at him for picking the Cornhuskers. I mean, he ended up being really wrong, but obviously obviously Wisconsin fans are Wisconsin fans, and that's not condoning them. But, it's just a very big game atmosphere that you have going on. It has that big name atmosphere. It's going to be interesting to see what Dave Aranda's defense does against the Badgers offense, knowing the Badgers offense. The one thing he's implementing that type of his style of defense, we'll see what, you know, if it's going to be that 3-4 or if they're going to use some different pieces there. He's got the talent at LSU with the defense. To be honest with you, and I made a joke about this, that they wouldn't give up a point for three seasons. I'm not, obviously it's hyperbole, but that defense is going to be damn good down in LSU.
Yeah.
So we'll see how Wisconsin can do it. But Wisconsin's defense will also be good. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, in my opinion. But, I mean, we'll save that conversation for another day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll save my forecast for that game until we get a little bit closer to it. But, no, we're going to talk a lot of baseball, and we're going to talk Muhammad Ali. I want to squeeze this in while we wait on our baseball roundtable just to get your impressions on it. Game one, obviously, already in the books. Game two is tipped off already. We're getting close to halftime, but NBA Finals, did you have a prediction? I'm taking Golden State in seven. I'll tell you what, I thought Golden State was done in that Oklahoma City series, and Oklahoma City found a way to, yes, you tipped your hat to Golden State, but Oklahoma City, the way they played that the second half of game seven, I don't know, whatever. It is what it is, but who do you like in that series? Do you think LeBron finally gets it done in Cleveland with the title there, or is it Golden State repeating?
I think it's Golden State. The way that they play, you thought they were done, but I mean, you hit that mark with them. You hit that you know, I just thought, like, yeah, I thought they were done too against Oklahoma City, and next thing you know, they reel off the victories, the wins, and take it to the finals. They just have a great lineup, and not to, obviously so does Cleveland, but I feel like Golden State will carry it off, and part of me wants it to be because I want to see, and obviously it's hard always to compare the difference between eras, but if you want to see like a dynasty type setup, and some people root against dynasty, some are for, but I never thought you'd ever see anything again like the Chicago Bulls. I don't think I ever still will with the Chicago Bulls back from the 90s with the three-peats in that decade. I'm not saying Golden State can be that way, and we'll see how they do without Luke Walton as an assistant next year. But I think just based on the way they're playing now and Bogut stepping up nicely, I'll go Golden State in seven.
Yeah, you make a good point. You talk about the dynasty. The next Chicago Bulls dynasty was actually, to me, it was impressive because it was two dynasties in one. I mean, you had the first Jordan three-peat, and then you had the second Jordan three-peat after he had, gone and played baseball, and that's what made it amazing because it was 6 and 8 years or whatever it was. So, it's hard to do. Even in that era, it was a great accomplishment. It was something that wasn't easily done. I think Golden State could be that. I mean, especially, like I said, the way they rebounded and won that game, that series against Oklahoma City, I think that, they're set up, even after this season, they're still set up for success next year and even beyond. So, interesting enough. But they're at halftime officially now, and it's an 11-point lead or 10-point lead for Golden State as they go into the locker room. So Golden State looking to go up 2-0 on their home floor.
And so, with that, and obviously with the NBA season right after that, I mean, you've had draft workouts. Nigel Hayes officially declared. He talked, obviously Jim Polzin had the scoop on that. Looking at Nigel Hayes coming back now for his senior year. Real quick, we got about maybe 2 minutes before we have to break to get the roundtable, all those regular parties involved. But thoughts on Nigel Hayes returning? And I think personally it's a great thing for him. He'll have the ability to put up more numbers, to improve his skill set. I think it could be a great thing where you have the ability for him to improve his draft stock further compared to what it was after last year. Then also, this team is a top five, top 10 team that is instantly a contender for the Big Ten and could be definitely be in national consideration come next March, being one of those teams that could take it all away.
Yeah, I think you're right. Are you there, Jake? Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay. My phone, I'm having technology problems like it did when I signed in. I'm not surprised. I mean, he didn't sign an agent. I didn't think he was a first-round pick. I think he had a somewhat, as far as I'm concerned, I think he had a disappointing year last year. I think he still has a few things to prove. And I was 90% sure he was going to be back, even when he said he was declaring, but he wasn't signing with an agent. So it's good for the Badgers. It's great for the program. Not really surprised by it, though. It's kind of what I thought was going to happen. I thought this is how it would play out, and it did. So,
absolutely. On that note, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back, guys. We're already 15 minutes in. It's kind of crazy how fast time flies when you're having fun. We're going to come back. Kurt Hoge, Bucky's fifth quarter. Of course, what he's doing now, being the associate, I think if I'm not mistaken, hopefully he does not hate me for misconstruing his title, associate reporter for MLB.com, working for the Brewers. We'll have him come on, giving Adam Rigg a quick ring right now, and we'll be on our way talking some Milwaukee Brewers and what's to come, what's come so far this season and what's yet to come for the rest of 2016. This is the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Welcome back, Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, of course, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Course. And just also, just real quick, big shout out to Mayfield Sports Marketing. Of course, working on this book project I've been working on with the Wisconsin Walk-On Tradition. I just want to shout out to them for helping me with finding out some interview ease on that part. So big shout out to Mayfield Sports Marketing, looking for a former Brewer. I think they do Brewers now, but former Packers or current former Packers, Badgers. Make sure you guys check out Mayfield Sports Marketing. And we are now here. We're going to transition away from football, away from Wisconsin Badgers. We're going to talk a little bit. Of course, being the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, we dabble in all sports around the state of Wisconsin. And the Milwaukee Brewers are into their season, 2 months in, a little over that. And we are joined now by TheBrewerNation.com's Adam Rigg. You hear him on the Big 920 and the Big 1070 as the Brewers Insider for the Mike Heller Show. You hear, of course, Kurt Hogue. He's been on the show a couple of times from Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Now, an associate reporter for MLB.com for the summer, covering your Milwaukee Brewers. Gentlemen, how is your Sunday evening?
Going well.
Yeah, we just had the rain come through here by me. It's cooling off, and the kids are asleep, so I'm ready to do this podcasting.
Awesome. And on that note, Scotty, I'm going to let you take the reins, brother, with this book project. I've been a little out of touch with Brewers. I've been trying to keep up listening to Bob Uecker while I write, which makes me laugh and then lose some my train of thought and whatnot. But we'll let Scotty take the reins of this. Scotty, go ahead, brother.
Yeah, by the way, sorry that you're listening to Uecker. But here's the thing. I just wanted to get this thing started right away by asking, when you look at the start to the season, they had a terrible April. They had a pretty good May and June start. Now I know the schedule looks really tough the next few weeks. But when you look at them just out of the gate, if you're grading them on a scale of A through F, your typical scale, where would you grade this team based on expectations and based on what they had for a roster coming out of spring training and how they performed the first two-plus months of the season?
I'll go ahead and jump on that first. I think I'd probably throw a B- at the team so far. If a C is average and that's hitting what you expected, I would say they've been a bit surprising in terms of some of the play. Obviously, they went one more games in May than they lost, or they're either at 500 exactly. I'm not too sure what the exact number was, but they've had some surprise performances this year from some guys stepping up, and all in all, to be five games under 500 a week or so into June, I would have accepted that, you know, going into the season.
And yeah, I'll build off of that for sure. I'll give them a little bit of a higher grade, probably even a solid B, if not bordering on a B+, only because if you listen to the national media and you listen to even a lot of the local media, the general thought was, well, this team is rebuilding. They sold off all their a lot of their key major league pieces last season to start, burgeoning the minor league developmental system and to get themselves back into a spot where they can sustainably compete over the next several seasons, or hopefully every season is the ultimate goal. So the fact that they're sitting where they are, and like Kurt mentioned, you know, they did finish over 500 for the month of May, once their starting pitching kind of rounded back into where they hoped it would be, they've overcome some issues and, you know, still have some other ones like Willie Peralta still can't get it going. But to be where they are based on expectations, I think they've really done a nice job. That said, I think they are about to hit a little bit of a downturn, and it's not going to be all roses through the month of June. The schedule gets really tough. But for now, you know, like I said, solid B, maybe even a B+.
Well, on that note, guys, and I'll start with Adam and Kurt. I obviously want your opinion on this as well. But the randomness of Major League Baseball and the things that can happen from year to year make you wonder. This team has the lowest payroll in baseball, and they figured that as they were going into the season, they weren't going to compete. They didn't do a whole lot. They grabbed a guy like Chris Carter, and they made a trade and got guys like Aaron Hill in here just to kind of – and Jonathan Villar, who I think has been an absolute surprise. But when you look at it, because of, and again, everybody was saying rebuild, rebuild, rebuild. In my mind, I'm saying, why don't you go sign two or three free agents, get two pitchers in here and try to contend. Get that second wild card spot, and who knows? I mean, obviously right now the Cubs and the Nationals and the Giants seem to be ahead of the class in the National League, but and the Mets, of course. But why, you know, when you look at it now, and again, hindsight being what it is, but now there's the talk, do you tank? Is it better to tank because you can get better draft picks? I don't know about you, and I know there's a new regime, but if you look at first-round draft picks with this franchise going all the way back to the 80s, there's no guarantee that a higher draft pick is any better. Not to mention, teams like St. Louis are always picking at the end of the draft and still finding guys coming up through their farm system. Why not try to contend? Is that something that if you could rewind the clock to November and you're the Brewers, you might reconsider? Again, I'm not saying break the bank, spend $100 million, but maybe get one or two more pieces of this puzzle and contend for a wild card spot.
Well,
go ahead, take it, Adam. Yeah, you can take that one.
Okay, I was just going to say that given what we know now, even if that's in the back of our minds in November, you still have to look at the landscape overall in the division and in the National League, and you probably still wouldn't think that you'd be contending against some of these teams. You know, St. Louis has had a little bit of a rough go of it at times, but Pittsburgh, the Cubs, the Nationals, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Giants, those teams were all, expected to be head and shoulders above where the Brewers will probably still finish this season. So I don't understand the idea of, spending any money that you don't have to this season. Bank it all. Get your prospects and put yourself in a position. Yeah, you're going to kind of be punting on this season. And I don't like the word tanking because they're not actively trying to lose. They're still trying to win games. But, they just kind of – they limit their ability to win games in certain ways, which to me isn't tanking. But, you try to get yourself into a spot where you can compete every year once you start to compete again, not throw another, 30, 40, or however many million dollars at it, and then sit yourself back another year from the rebuild, which at some point is an inevitability.
Okay, now along those lines, then let's say when you talk about trading pieces, and obviously I think Luke Roy probably will be a guy they move, but do you feel that it's necessary? I know people think his contract is high, Ryan Braun, but in 2 years, that contract's not even going to be a blip on a radar for players of his caliber. Do you think they can keep Ryan Braun and still rebuild and be contenders in 2 years when Ryan Braun is still on his roster, or do they absolutely have to trade him because there's no chance that they can contend within the next 2 years?
So I think that essentially comes down to what you expect to get in terms of value out of him we don't know when David Stearns and the Brewers are expecting to compete. I would personally think that it'd be 2018 before we can even think about it, or 2019 before it's an actual possibility, at which case Braun is, 35, 36?
Yeah.
And I don't know how much value they're going to be getting out of him, especially with outfield, with Domingo Santana already in right field. They've got Trent Clark coming up. They've got Brett Phillips, and you still don't know about guys like Monte Harrison. In terms of outfield prospects, that Braun could be blocking their spot if his production drops off significantly by then. It's an interesting. I don't think there's a clear right or wrong thing to do with him this summer, because he could still very well be a productive player when the Brewers compete, and also continue to bring fans to the stadium while they are rebuilding. But it's a matter of, to me, it's a matter of, you get more you might get the most value out of him in terms of a trade now than you will in terms of value you'll get from him playing in 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, see, and I agree with that. I think, though, the key for David Stearns is that you have to trade for value, not just to trade because you think it makes sense. I know they're going to get prospects, but I'm talking – You want to dig in there. You got to get, in my mind anyway, a pitching prospect that's going to be at least a number two starter in a major. It projects to be a number two. You might not get a guy like Urias from the Dodgers or anything ridiculous like that, but you need a guy who's got at least a ceiling to be a number two starter, because while I like a couple of the pitchers in the system, it's not the deepest pitching staff as far as prospects go, and I think at the very least you're going to want to get the value. So if you're going to trade Braun this year, I'm fine with it, but don't just trade him because you feel like you have to, because it's something that you want to get not block spots for some of these prospects coming up. So I don't know if you agree. What do you think, and both of you guys, I hope, chime in on this, you think they have to get back for Ryan Braun right now?
Well, let me jump in first and say, to follow up on the last question, no, I don't think that Ryan Braun's contract is prohibitive at all, not only not to keep him because of the Brewers' payroll situation, but also because, like you said, in a couple of years, as salaries continue to go up, but even where they are now, there's no need to trade Ryan Braun to free up money. There's no need to trade Ryan Braun because you think that you need to get something back for him. I think that he's perfectly capable of filling like the Jeff Jenkins veteran outfielder role in 2018, 2019, because right now, Ryan Braun's still the best hitter on your team. And chances are next year, Ryan Braun will be the best hitter on your team. So there's no reason to force yourself into a situation where you're getting less back for him than you might want. And like I said, you don't need to trade Ryan Braun, so don't force that into yourself. So to transition into your actual question this time, though, what to get back for Ryan Braun, you know, it depends on the overall state of the team, where you think you are at certain positions. They're deep in the outfield in terms of prospects at all the levels. They could use corner infielders for
yep.
sure. They're deep up the middle at the infield, and they've got a pretty good catching prospect now in Jay Nottingham. So ideally, yeah, pitching and corner infield, I would say, is the starting point for any major deal that this team would make, whether it's Braun, Luke, or anybody else.
I would also follow that corner infield and a starting pitching arm to go along with Josh Hader that they have in AA right now. And I don't think you don't need to be worried about the Brewers trading someone for the sake of trading them. I think that David Stearns is asking for a whole lot. He's going to be asking for a whole lot from both Jonathan Lucroy and Ryan Braun, because they are two of the biggest names on the market right now. And the Brewers aren't going to go for a deal unless they know what they're getting. They're getting a nice haul in return. And so, and I think we've seen that even over the last year in terms of the trades that not even Stearns is a part of, but the trade for Gomez and Fires, which looks like a great haul for the Brewers right now, and the trade for Jonathan VR and things of that such, where the Brewers don't just trade away guys to trade them away, essentially.
Yeah, Stearns has been very good about when he gets the deal that he wants, he pulls the trigger quickly, like with Jason Rogers. You know, a useful backup bench piece, but he got two players out of that, you know, from Pittsburgh in that deal, and he pulled the trigger immediately. He didn't wait. So he's very good about getting what he wants, and I love that out of this GM.
Now, we have time for just a couple more questions. I'll just make more of a comment. If you guys want to comment on it, you can. I still think the way he plays the outfield, Domingo Santana is either a DH, but in the National League, maybe he's a first baseman down the road. But I want to know your thoughts on a different player, a guy like Willy Peralta. There have been some surprises on his pitching staff. I think Nelson has taken the next step. I think at times, especially lately over the last month, some of the other pitchers who struggled really have looked really good. But Willy Peralta has failed to take that next step, even though, by all accounts, most people think he still has the best stuff on his staff, much like Manny Parra for years, had the best stuff on his staff but just couldn't put it all together. What do you think the biggest problem or the biggest hindrance right now is to Willy Peralta, okay, I did it again subconsciously, to Willy Peralta taking that next step to become a good, solid major league starter?
Well, Peralta, I mean, to just put it plainly, he seems to lack any breaking stuff that can put a batter away, that he can dominate a guy with. He hasn't developed that put-away pitch in addition to his power fastball, which he's been struggling to locate this year. He gets hit very hard. I mean, guys square him up. The Cardinals game in one inning, MLB has been very forward with this, the advanced stat of exit velocity from the bat. In one inning, four or five guys hit a ball 105 miles an hour faster off of him. And so he struggles to miss bats, and that also doubles with the fact that the guys are squaring him up.
Yeah, the quick comment on Santana, I think he can play the outfield. I think he's got the arm and the athleticism to do it. He needs to, I think, focus in his energy levels so that he can have consistent production and performance out there. But with Peralta, you know, some people thought he took the step forward a couple of years ago. Then he had some injury issues. He's long since passed the honeymoon period with his first Tommy John surgery. So, yeah, always have to worry if there's something wrong with him physically in the back of your mind. But, you know, not only with what Kurt said, because I agree with everything that he said about Peralta, but there is talk that, you know, one of the biggest things that got in Peralta's way when he was a rookie was that when he got into trouble on the mound, he let his emotions and the mental side of the game overwhelm him a little bit. And when people said that he took that next step in his 17-win season to, quote, a horrible stat that is the win, it's because people said that he really got over that kind of thing and was able to bear down and just get through adversity within the same inning. People talk about his body language all the time, how he'll fall off the mound when he doesn't get a pitch located properly, and how he works very, very slowly when he gets into trouble. I think all that comes back to the mental side of the game, where if you're trusting your stuff, then you just kind of get right back up on the bump and throw the next pitch. But when you have a guy who's, like Kurt said, lacking fastball control, he's a guy who pitches to contact anyway. So when he's not locating and they square him up like they're doing right now, then you don't have confidence in your pitches. And when you can't throw your breaking stuff for strikes all the time, then what can you throw? So he's up there searching all the time, and that's the worst kind of a situation for a starting pitcher to be in.
Yeah, and just to add, you look at the – I like what Adam said about the mental side. There's two guys in the starting rotation that in specific come across as guys that just battle. You got Jimmy Nelson and Junior Guerra, guys that seem to just be able to get into jams and work their way through and either limit the damage, or they just buckle in and they grind through it on them. And that's what we're looking for from Peralta. But Matt Garza, the guy Brewers are paying a lot of money to, just had his second rehab start with the Timber Rattlers, and I believe after the game they said that he has one more. They're planning to give him one more rehab start, and then they hope for him to be ready to come back.
Right.
And, well, whose rotation spot is he going to take? And I think it was, for a while, it was probably a toss-up between Peralta and Zach Davies, but, I mean, after Zach Davies went 8 shutout with 3 singles against the Cardinals, Willie Peralta's got one option left to the minors. Peralta might be the odd man out if and when Matt Garza comes back.
Gentlemen, I got one last question, and it's regarding Craig Counsell. And I think Craig Counsell's done a fine enough job with the talent this team has, but there's still one overriding concern I have, and it goes back a few years. Fundamentals, including and especially base running, seems to still be an issue with this team. It's been an issue for a while. I half-jokingly blame Ed Cedar because he seems to outlast every regime, that the base running never gets better. But I'm kidding. But overall, from a fundamental standpoint, I just think, especially a guy like David Stearns, who believes in sabermetrics and defensive metrics and even some of the base running things, I think that's, as a franchise, they have to get better at some of those things. They've done a better job working pitch counts and drawing walks, and that's a huge improvement. But the base running still really, really frustrates a lot of people. And I don't know, because you're closer to the team day in and day out, if it's something that they're concerned about, or right now it's just, you know, trying to get all the pieces in place. What are your thoughts on some of the fundamental aspects of this team?
Well, the thing Counsell always talks about is with a player like Chris Carter and his powers versus his strikeout, and a player like Jonathan Villar and his base running, you want the good all the time, but unfortunately with that aggressiveness and with that style comes a little bit of the negative that people like to focus on and like to key in on. Everybody likes to give Villar a hard time for making an out at third base. when they're not realizing the times when he goes first to third on a single and he puts himself into a better position to score, or when he steals the base effectively. Nobody is, you know, counteracting their negativity arguments for the most part with the positive things that VR brings to the table in his aggressiveness. And there was an example, I forget the team that it was against, but he had just had a couple of games in a row where he made him out at third base. And then the next game, had he been more aggressive, he would have easily gotten into third because of a bobble in the outfield and a bad throw on top of that. And then he maybe would have scored, I believe it was the tying run at the time, later that inning. But because he stayed at second base, he ended up, you know, the Brewers got themselves out of the inning. And Council definitely talked about that right after the game, saying, well, see, there's the situation where VR was maybe thinking not being so aggressive because he didn't want to make that out of third base, and then we don't get the run out of it. So, you know, Council believes, obviously, I think, in those fundamentals, and he will. He's talking to players. He said after the game today, for example, as we do this live on Sunday here, that Domingo Santana was almost thrown out at home plate on a single when he was trying to score because he wasn't running hard enough, and then he said he would talk to him about that. So you know that Council does not like calling out players individually in the public. He likes to deal with that, you know, behind the closed clubhouse doors. But he's very much aware of perception and reality, and I think that the perception of VR is a reckless one because people only key on the negatives. But the reality is that you have an aggressive player who more often than not is doing positive things for his team. And, yeah, Council will try to tell him, hey, make sure you're thinking out there, not just running. But at the same time, he likes the fact that the aggressiveness pays off.
Yeah, and, I mean, Adam pretty much hit on everything. I don't really think that – I think that the Brewers' base running, I guess we can call them struggles, but I wouldn't really call it that. I would say, I mean, the errors that they do make, which I think every team actually makes, are not as significant as they've been played out to be. I mean, Jonathan VR leads the league in stolen bases. He goes first to third on foul pop-ups to – the second baseman. I mean, no one else in the majors does that. And it reminds you a lot of exactly what they did with Carlos Gomez. When he first came to the Brewers, they took the leash off and they let him play the way that he wants to play. And I've talked to Jonathan VR about it. And he says that the coaches trust him and they let him play the way he wants to play. And obviously, like Adam was saying, Council and the staff are aware of mistakes and they want to correct those and want him to pick his spots a little better. But in terms of hitting and getting on base at a 400 clip and leading the league in steals and driving pitchers crazy with his base running, the Brewers have let Jonathan VR play. And I think that's one of the main reasons that he's having such a good year to start the season is that the Brewers are the team's finally letting him, giving him an everyday job and letting him do his thing. And sometimes the bad will come with that, but I think you'll take more of the good that you get than some of those bad plays.
Oh, absolutely. I think Jonathan VR has proven he's an everyday player, and I think he's played himself into some money, whether it's in Milwaukee or somewhere else. And so there's no doubt about that. Again, the base running thing, I think sometimes it's just an overall feeling you get because for years and years and years with this team, there have been some interesting base running things. But you know what? As I mentioned before, the on-base percentage is up. The actual errors in the field are down. So things are trending in the right direction. Jake, I know we've spent a lot of time I appreciate it. I know we went a little long, but I've been waiting to have these conversations for a while, and it was good to be able to get this release.
Not a problem. No problem. And no, we just want to thank you guys. And maybe here, one quick last question. Brett Phillips laugh. Funny. I kind of keep it light. Like that stuff. I kind of played it for like 5 hours straight and I was laughing along with it real quick. Ab, starting with you. Great laugh or greatest laugh ever?
It may be the greatest laugh ever. I have the pleasure of hearing it in person at Brewers on Deck. He kept it to a minimum. It wasn't quite as severe as it was in some of the spring training videos. But that guy has got a great personality and a great laugh to go with, and I'm really happy that he looks to be a big part of the future of this team. He's going to be the type of player, and I've been saying this to anybody who will listen, he's going to be the type of player that this fan base particularly will latch onto and love for as long as he's in town.
I would say the greatest laugh ever. However, It is eerily similar to my laugh. I had like 4 or 5 different people post it on or tag me on Facebook or Twitter saying, asking if it was me. So in that regard, it's a little eerie, the fact that we have the same laugh. But no, it's funny. And Brett Phillips seems to be a really good kid, a really fun kid, and look forward to seeing him up with the big league club sometime in the near future.
Well, I, before you guys cut us off, then I just have to say, it sounds like it's going to be Joke Tuesday in the press box to try to get Kurt to
laugh. Oh, gosh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Oh, man. Mom Joke Monday.
Uh-oh. That's awesome. That is awesome. Gentlemen, it's great having you guys on the podcast, on the show. Would love to have you guys both on again down the road coming up. Obviously, I know Kurt. We'll definitely have you on for Bucky's fifth quarter. We'll have you on for baseball too. Adam, we'd love to have you on too for baseball as well. You guys have been great, and just thank you guys again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely happy to do it, and you guys have my number, so anytime.
Excellent, guys. It's Adam Rigg from thebrewernation.com, Kurt Hogue from Bucky's fifth quarter, MLB.com. Let's take a quick break. We're going to wrap up the show after that, talk some Muhammad Ali, Brock Lesnar to wrap it up in our quick hitters. Guys, have a great night. Actually, we're not going anywhere yet, I promise you. We'll be right back. This is the Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza. Guys, welcome back to Kielbasa King Sports Extravaganza, of course, brought to you by Bucky's Fifth Quarter. Always great having Adam Rigg from thebrewernation.com, Kurt Hogue, Bucky's Fifth Quarter, and the current MLB associate reporter, and real great talking to them. Good breakdowns. Great job, Scotty, on that and getting the everything rolling there.
I was a little excited. I legitimately was jumping at the bit. It's been so long since I've been able to have conversations with good baseball conversations, and there was a lot. I mean, we could have went a while. I think I was a little bit a little bit overzealous. It was great, and those guys are great, and it's in my DNA to talk baseball, and it's been rough, man. It's been rough.
It's all good. Right now we're in our kind of our closing time right now in terms of for those that will listen after the podcast, our live feed's out. Thank you guys all for listening to us, and we're going to wrap up the show. A couple of things coming up real quick. A quick hitter, Brock Lesnar, looks like he's heading back to the UFC for a one fight clause, and then he'll fight in SummerSlam immediately after that, a month later. There's obviously some discussion too with the way Dana White took the press credential from one of the from Ariel Helwani, from MMAfighting.com, our SB Nation cousins that actually cover mixed martial arts and UFC. And it's essentially, it's, yeah, which really terrible, in my opinion, because he broke the Lesnar story. And, but no, Lesnar's coming back. But also, I mean, the biggest one, we haven't had a chance to really even dive into it yet today. We're talking about the death of Muhammad Ali, obviously. Sad day with a man that was known to be controversial, a man that, you know, obviously talking about civil rights, but also his anti-war stance for the Vietnam War, and a man that you saw almost, it seemed like every athlete that I saw on Twitter would had a quote from Ali. And even on Madison.com, there's a Madison, the Madison link to this is that he actually lost a qualifier in the Pan Am Games in 1959 in Madison, which is his only loss as an amateur. Go check out, if you guys get a chance to, Tom Oates' article at the Wisconsin State Journal, Madison.com, about just, there's a great story talking about back when he was known as Cassius Clay, going in to a shoe store and charming some patrons and the shoe store owner there down in Madison. I think it was off of State Street. And Muhammad Ali, obviously one of the greatest fighters in the world, one of the most quotable men in the world, definitely a figure that, was controversial and was what part of the movement to, you know, obviously a great kind of a, I won't say awakening, but I would say just a figure that, you know, was a civil rights figure and anti-war activist and a man that wanted America, you know, made people uncomfortable and he should have back, especially in those days in the 1960s and just how influential of a figure he is now.
Yeah. You know, a couple of things. I grew up, my father was a huge boxing. I grew up around boxing and he loved the sport and, talked a lot of history. I mean, I was like, old enough to see Ali's last fight. You know, I was a youngster, like 10 years old, but I was still able to see. But I didn't get to see him in all of his heyday, all of his prime, until years later when I could rewatch those fights. A couple of things, you know, the throw in Manila, I think, did some serious damage to him physically, and he was never the same after that. But it was a great fight. If you put a Mount Rushmore of sports, and I don't mean boxing, of sport, Muhammad Ali is likely on that without a shadow of a doubt, because of the way he transcended his sport. Now, my dad didn't always agree with some of his politics. Civil rights stuff, 100%, but my dad was also a military guy, and there was some of that. But as far as from everybody I've talked to, it doesn't matter what you believe in, what the matter of your politics is, the one thing they'll say about Muhammad Ali is he was legitimately kind to everybody he came across. And he lived his life that way, even with the struggles through Parkinson. He was accommodating. He was kind. He did a lot for the civil rights movement. He did a lot for the sport of boxing. Boxing is down a lot over the years, partially because there aren't Muhammad Ali's. There aren't Joe Frazier's. There aren't guys like that. You know, It was a sad thing. And, you know, it was sad because on Friday, I knew he was in the hospital already. And on Friday, there had been a report that came out, a conflicting report that he had stabilized early in the afternoon. But then things took a turn for the worse. And then later that night when we were up in Oshkosh, we had heard he passed away. And, you know, he suffered through some of his Parkinson's issues. So the good news is he's not suffering anymore. But sports lost a guy who, you know, not only was a great athlete and great at what he did, but was a ambassador and was a guy who did a lot for a lot of people, and a lot of people could have took a lot away and improved their lives because of Muhammad Ali, and now he's not there to do that. However, hopefully people who were friends, who got to know him, who were historians, who want to know what the real deal was, hopefully they're still learning from guys like Muhammad Ali, even though Muhammad Ali is no longer with us. So, but yeah, it's definitely not just another former athlete that passed away. It's Muhammad freaking Ali, for crying out loud. You know, Yeah. Every life's important, don't get me wrong, but from a historical and impactful standpoint, it's huge. I mean, I don't know how much coverage you watch, but CNN had it, you know, as their main story. NFL Network, that's all they had NFL players, former NFL players, talk about Muhammad Ali. ESPN, I mean, you couldn't go anywhere on TV late Friday night and into Saturday without somebody talking about Muhammad Ali and the impact that he made on society and on history, and again, not just boxing history. So it's one of those, you know, one of those impactful passing land. And like I said, he'd been sick for a while, but up until last week, there wasn't a death watch for him. I mean, we thought he was going to be with us for quite some time yet, but that was just not to be.
And it's one of those things where he's a sports figure that transcended. You know, a lot of times with athletes, and obviously, I mean, athletes make their stances and they believe, you know, believe what they want to, what they believe. But really it's just, you know, obviously with what he accomplished in life and just the stances that he took, he transcended sports and he,
right.
Like you mentioned, and it's huge. And just, you know, the world, you know, lost, you know, a person that, like I said, he transcended the boxing ring. And,
I'm gonna put it to you this way too. Everybody's got opinions, whether you agree with his opinion or not. Like I said, I agree with probably 90% of what he believed and 10% not so much, but he backed it up. Anybody can have an opinion. He backed it up. He was out there fighting the fights. He not figuratively and literally, of course, boxing. He was out there supporting and putting money behind his cause. So, you know, you can't help but respect that. Because, again, people can have empty promises and empty rhetoric. There's nothing empty about Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali backed up what he believed, backed up the things he said, and you know, for lack of a better term, put his money where his mouth was. It wasn't just, hey, look at me, I'm a talking head, and I'm trying to influence your opinion because I'm Muhammad Ali. It's, no, I want social change, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it and do it, and do it tenfold than what I already said I was going to do. So no matter what you believe, how can you not respect that? How can you not respect somebody who can back it up? So again, it's a big loss. It's a big loss to this country, to the world, to society. And, you know, well wishes and prayers to his family and, of course, everybody out there who was touched and was able to grow as human beings because of Muhammad Ali.
Yep. And on that note, guys, we'll come back next week, or hopefully next week, depending upon how this book thing rolls with the final nooks and crannies, the final little odds and ends that we're hoping to wrap up in the coming week or two. So we'll play by ear. Hopefully next week we can get back together, talk more Brewers, talk obviously Bucks, NBA Finals, maybe get some preview of the Badgers and the Packers with OTAs on the Packers side. Badgers, start previewing some positions. Well, hopefully we can get a guest or two on there, and we'll go from there. But on that note, guys, really great talking with you guys again. Really great getting back in the saddle again, Scotty. We'll do this again soon. For the Polish Rifle, Scott Wisniewski, this is Jay Kokorowski. Follow us on at B5Q, at Kielbasa Kings WI. For Scotty, at Scott Wisniewsk 2. And for me, Jay Coco B5Q. Doza Bachenya, we'll see you guys soon. Take care.
Accordion solo, American Polka, played by Mr. John J. Kimball, Edison Record. Thank you.